They were outside in the hallway, looking into the living room through the large glass doors. Morton was sitting on one couch. Kenner and Sanjiang were on the other. The discussion was quiet. In fact, it looked to Evans just like one more of the endless investment meetings that Morton endured. Evans picked up the hall phone and dialed a number.
"Center for Risk Analysis," a woman said.
"Professor Kenner's office, please."
"One moment."
Clicking. Another voice.
"Center for Risk Analysis, Professor Kenner's office."
"Good afternoon," Evans said.
"My name is Peter Evans, and I'm calling for Professor Kenner."
"I'm sorry he's not in the office."
"Do you know where he is?"
"Professor Kenner is on extended leave."
"It is important that I reach him," Evans said. "Do you know how I could do that?"
"Well, it shouldn't be hard since you are in Los Angeles, and so is he."
So she had seen the caller ID, Evans thought. He would have imagined Morton had a blocked ID, but evidently not. Or perhaps the secretary in Massachusetts had a way to unblock it.
"Well," Evans said, "can you tell me..."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Evans," she said, "but I'm not able to help you further."
Click. Sarah said,
"What was that about?"
Before Evans could answer, a cell phone rang in the living room. He saw Kenner reach into his pocket and answer briefly. Then he turned, looked at Evans, and waved. Sarah said,
"His office called him?"
"Looks like it."
"So I guess that's Professor Kenner."
"I guess it is," Evans said. "And we're dismissed."
"Come on," Sarah said. "I'll give you a ride home."
They walked past the open garage, the row of Ferraris glinting in the sun. Morton owned 9 vintage Ferraris, which he kept in various garages. These included a 1947 Spider Corsa, a 1956 Testarossa, and a 1959 California Spider, each worth more than $1 million. Evans knew this because he reviewed the insurance every time Morton bought another one. At the far end of the line was Sarah's black Porsche convertible. She backed it out, and he climbed in beside her. Even by Los Angeles standards, Sarah Jones was an extremely beautiful woman. She was tall, with a honey-colored tan, shoulder-length blonde hair, blue eyes, perfect features, very white teeth. She was athletic in the casual way that California people were athletic, generally showing up for work in a jogging suit or short tennis skirt. She played golf and tennis, scuba dived, mountain biked, skied, snowboarded, and God knew what else. Evans felt tired whenever he thought about it. But he also knew that she had issues, to use the California word. Sarah was the youngest child of a wealthy San Francisco family. Her father was a powerful attorney who had held political office. Her mother was a former high fashion model. Sarah's older brothers and sisters were all happily married, all successful, and all waiting for her to follow in their footsteps. She found her family's collective success a burden. Evans had always wondered why she chose to work for Morton, another powerful and wealthy man, or why she had come to Los Angeles at all, since her family regarded any address south of the Bay Bridge to be hopelessly tawdry. But she was good at her job and devoted to Morton. And as George often said, her presence was aesthetically pleasing, and the actors and celebrities who attended Morton's parties agreed. She had dated several of them, which further displeased her family. Sometimes Evans wondered if everything she did was rebellion, like her driving. She drove quickly, almost recklessly, shooting down Benedict Canyon, heading into Beverly Hills.
"Do you want to go to the office or your apartment?"
"My apartment," he said. "I have to pick up my car." She nodded, swerved around a slow-moving Mercedes, then cut left down a side street. Evans took a deep breath.
"Listen," she said. "Do you know what net war is?"
What? He wasn't sure he had heard her over the sound of the wind.
Net war.
No, he said. Why?
I heard them talking about it before you showed up. Kenner and that Sanjong guy.
Evan shook his head.
Doesn't ring a bell. You sure it wasn't netware?
Might have been.
She sped across Sunset, running a yellow light, and then downshifted as she came to Beverly.
You still on Roxbury?
He said he was. He looked at her long legs protruding from the short white skirt.
Who were you going to play tennis with?
I don't think you know him.
It's not,
No, that's over.
I see.
I'm serious, it's over.
Okay, Sarah, I hear you.
You lawyers are all so suspicious.
So it's a lawyer you're playing with?
No, it's not a lawyer. I don't play with lawyers.
What do you do with them?
As little as possible, like everybody else.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Except you, of course, she said, giving him a dazzling smile.
She accelerated hard, making the engine scream. Peter Evans lived in one of the older apartment buildings on Roxbury Drive, in the flats of Beverly Hills. There were four units in his building, across the street from Roxbury Park. It was a nice park, a big green expanse, always busy. He saw Hispanic nannies chatting in groups while they minded the children of rich people, and several oldsters sitting in the sun. Off in a corner, a working mother in a business suit had taken off lunch to be with the kids. The car screeched to a stop.
"Here you are."
"Thanks," he said, getting out.
"Isn't it time to move? You've been here 5 years."
"I'm too busy to move," he said.
"Got your keys?"
"Yeah, but there's always one under the doormat."
He reached in his pocket, jingled metal.
"All set.
See you."
And she raced off, squealed around the corner, and was gone. Evans walked through the little sunlit courtyard and went up to his apartment on the second floor. As always, he had found Sarah slightly distressing. She was so beautiful and so flirtatious. He always had the feeling that she kept men at a distance by keeping them off balance. At least, she kept him off balance. He could never tell if she wanted him to ask her out or not. But considering his relationship with Morton, it was a bad idea. He would never do it. As soon as he walked in the door, the phone began to ring. It was his assistant, Heather. She was going home early because she felt sick. Heather frequently felt sick toward the afternoon, in time to beat rush hour traffic. She tended to call in sick on Fridays or Mondays. Yet the firm showed a surprising reluctance to fire her. She had been there for years. Some said she had had a relationship with Bruce Black, the founding partner, and that ever since, Bruce lived in constant dread that his wife would find out, since she had all the money. Others claimed Heather was seeing another of the firm's partners, always unspecified. A third story was that she had been on the scene when the firm moved offices from one Century City skyscraper to another, in the course of which she stumbled on some incriminating documents and copied them. Evans suspected the truth was more mundane, that she was a clever woman who had worked in the firm long enough to know everything about wrongful termination suits, and now carefully gauged her repeated infractions against the cost and aggravation of their firing her, and in this way worked about 30 weeks a year. Heather was invariably assigned to the best junior associate in the firm, on the assumption that a really good attorney wouldn't be hampered by her inconstancy. Evans had tried for years to get rid of her. He was promised a new assistant next year. He saw it as a promotion.
"I'm sorry you don't feel well," he told Heather dutifully. One had to go along with her pretense. "It's just my stomach," she said. "I have to see the doctor."
"Are you going today?"
"Well, I'm trying to get an appointment."
"All right, then."
"But I wanted to tell you, they just set a big meeting for day after tomorrow, 9 o'clock in the big conference room."
"Oh?"
Mr. Morton just called it. Apparently 10 or 12 people are called.
You know who?
No, they didn't say.
Evans thought. Useless.
Okay, he said. And don't forget, you have the arraignment for Morton's daughter next week. This time it's Pasadena, not downtown. And Margot Lane's calling about her Mercedes lawsuit, and that BMW dealer still wants to go forward.
He still wants to sue the church?
He calls every other day.
Okay, is that it?
No, there's about 10 others. I'll try to leave the list on your desk if I feel well enough.
That meant she wouldn't.
Okay, he said. Are you coming in?
No, it's too late. I need to get some sleep.
Then I'll see you tomorrow.
He realized he was very hungry. There was nothing to eat in the refrigerator except a container of yogurt of indeterminate age, some wilted celery, and a half-finished bottle of wine left over from his last date, about 2 weeks earlier. He had been seeing a girl named Carol, who did product liability at another firm. They'd picked each other up in the gym and had begun a desultory, intermittent affair. They were both busy and not especially interested in each other, to tell the truth. They met once or twice a week, had passionate sex, and then one of them would plead a breakfast appointment the next day and go home early. Sometimes they went to dinner as well, but not usually. Neither of them wanted to take the time. He went into the living room to check his answering machine. There was no message from Carol, but there was a message from Janice, another girl he sometimes saw. Janice was a trainer in the gym, the possessor of one of those L.A. bodies, perfectly proportioned and rock hard. Sex for Janice was an athletic event, involving multiple rooms, couches, and chairs, and it always left Evans feeling vaguely inadequate, as if his body fat weren't low enough for her. But he continued to see her, feeling vaguely proud that he could have a girl who looked so astonishing, even if the sex wasn't that good. And she was often available on short notice. Janice had a boyfriend who was older, a producer for a cable news station. He was out of town a lot, and she was restless. Janice had left a message the night before. Evans didn't bother to call her back. With Janice, it was always that night or forget it. Before Janice and Carol, there had been other women more or less the same. Evans told himself he should find a more satisfying relationship, something more serious, more adult, more suited to his age and station in life. But he was busy, and just took things as they came. Meanwhile, he was hungry. He went back down to his car and drove to the nearest drive-in, a hamburger joint on Pico. They knew him there. He had a double cheeseburger and a strawberry shake. He went home, intending to go to bed. Then he remembered that he owed Morton a call.
"I'm glad you called," Morton said. "I've just been going over some things with... Where are we now on my donations to NERF? The Vanuatu lawsuit? All that?"
"I don't know," Evans said. "The papers are drawn and signed, but I don't think anything's been paid yet."
"Good. I want you to hold off payments."
"Sure, no problem."
"Just for a while."
"Okay.
There's no need to say anything to NERF."
"No, no, of course not."
"Good."
Evans hung up. He went into the bedroom to get undressed. The phone rang again. It was Janice, the exercise instructor.
"Hey," she said. "I was thinking about you, and I wondered what you were doing."
"As a matter of fact, I was going to bed."
"Oh, pretty early for that."
"I just got in from Iceland."
"So you must be tired."
"Well," he said, "not that tired."
"Want company?"
"Sure." She giggled and hung up.